Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hello.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
Hello. This
hello.
Is Adrienne Leeds.
Hello.
Yes, I'm terribly sorry, everyone. Please forgive me, but we had the wrong information.
Uh-oh.
The wrong numbers, and we've been trying to make this work for the last 15, 20 minutes, so I apologize to everyone who's out there. Who have I got out there?
This is Eric in Atlanta.
This is
Heather in Las Vegas.
Columbia.
In Las Vegas.
Sherry
yes,
in California.
Marshall in New York.
Vegas. Okay.
And
okay.
Columbia. Marshall in New York.
Great. Okay.
Jay in Maine.
I apologize once again for the problem. It was obviously the had to do with the letter that went out that was not working for technical reasons. Okay, so everybody's here?
Yeah, mine worked fine.
Okay, excellent.
Yeah.
And my name is Cherry Chapman from Paris.
How are you?
Just fine. How are you? Good to hear you.
So, I want to go ahead and get started since we're now a few minutes late and so that we can talk about the idea of having your own pied à terre in Paris. I assume that for most of you, you've pretty much already determined that it's a good idea for you to do.
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to make certain assumptions, which may or may not be correct at this point, and that is that what you're looking to do is to have something that you can use on your own when you're here, as well as something that would make a good investment to rent out when not.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Is there anybody online that just wants to move here permanently and be full-time?
Could be either way for Heather in Las Vegas. I lived in Paris for a year and met my husband there and married him there, and he has three brothers there. So for me, it could go either way. We want to move back if it's possible. If it's not, we want to buy an apartment and use it when we're there and rent it out when we're not. So for me personally,
well,
it can go either way.
It's a good place to start, okay, even if you only spend a little bit of time there.
Right.
I also want to introduce my two search consultants who are online with us, Mary Ellen Gallagher.
Hi there.
Hey.
And Elizabeth Hockman. She's in the process of calling back in since we were having technical problems. So they're going to probably jump in at any point if there's, you know, questions that they can add something to. Okay?
Okay.
We're really sorry to have kept you waiting. It was just sort of one of those international things with all the numbers.
No problem.
Understand.
Hey, we made the connection now, so we're good.
Yes, exactly.
Great.
Okay, the seven steps are really quite simple. The idea to the seven steps is the way of breaking it down so that the process becomes simple and doable and in some sort of a logical fashion. And the truth is that purchasing property in France is really not all that difficult. There are some hurdles and there are some pitfalls which you can fall into if you don't follow the process pretty clearly and correctly. So that's what I want to get through. That's the idea that I want to get across in this phone call. So let me go ahead and just outline the seven steps. And if you don't mind holding your questions till after I go through the steps, that would be terrific. But go ahead and make note of things that you want to, you know, ask along the way. Okay? So step number one is, of course, the single most important thing you're going to do, and that is to determine your goals, what it is you want to achieve with this property. So if the property is going to be something you're going to live in the rest of your life, you're going to look at that idea very differently than if it's purely investment versus whether you want to use it some of the time and still have a good investment and cover most of the cost or how much you want to profit from it. And those are some of the things that we certainly talk about with our clients from the very, very beginning, because it will mean looking at different kinds of properties, different size properties, different budgets, different areas of the city, and, you know, what's really going to work to satisfy all your goals. So we're going to start with that. Now, once you've determined that, and that's probably not something you can do very quickly. You know, that's something that's going to probably take you some time to mull over and to fine-tune that idea. But the more specific you can become on that, the better. And then after that, step two is to determine the structure of the purchase. What I mean by that is how you want the ownership to be structured, and the reason that's important is because in France, inheritance tax laws can be very expensive for you later down the road if you don't structure it correctly. So one of the things you're going to probably talk about is whether it needs to be in the form of an SCI, which is a Société Civile Immobilier property company that enables the property to act like shares of a company that are then distributed among its members, or if you want to just put it in the names of your children to avoid certain inheritance tax issues that way, or to create what's called a community property marital regime, which is another way of avoiding inheritance tax, okay? All of that is obviously something you should talk to a professional about and get some very good advice. But you'll need to know that before the final purchase, before the final acte de vente or sales deed is signed. Step three is then to contact the lenders and apply for a mortgage. And in this economic environment, a mortgage is a really valuable thing, especially in France, because interest rates are still hovering around 4%. They're quite a bit lower than they are in the U.S. There are a lot of lenders who are willing to lend to non-residents. They will lend up to 80% loan-to-value. Sometimes they will go higher. And they have a lot of different products, everything from interest-only to variable to fixed rates that make sense. And when you take a mortgage, it means that you really only have to deal with the transfer of funds from dollars into euros for the 20% that you're going to put down. So it's a really good way of hedging your bets against the rate of exchange. Okay, and then contacting the lenders is something you actually want to do before you ever start to look at properties, because when you know how much you can spend, how much you can borrow, then you know how much you can spend, so maybe you can buy a better property. And then when you're negotiating with the sellers, you actually have a lot more clout if you know there's no issue with getting a mortgage. We work with six different lenders, and we can certainly put you in contact with those lenders so that you can start to get a dossier on file. Step four, of course, is then to actually do the visit of the properties, the search and the visit of the property. If you attempt to do a search on your own, just know that there are 4,000 agencies in the city of Paris alone. They each represent a small group of properties, mostly within their own neighborhoods. Some agencies do represent properties of a certain quality or level, particularly of a higher level. They don't network very well. They don't share commissions very well. There is no MLS. There are more websites online which will bring a variety of agencies together, but you still cannot hire one agent who can show you all properties, which makes it a pretty daunting experience. The other thing is, because the agents really only care about selling their own properties, they will sell you absolutely anything, and they will tell you absolutely anything. And no matter how many agents we adore and love and trust, they still have that in mind, and that is just to sell the property. So I still recommend, whether it's us or somebody else, that you do hire a consultant who can act as sort of a buffer and protect you, and who works directly for you to make sure that when you do look at properties, that you end up buying the right property for you. Step five, and that is after you've done your search and you've done your visits and you've found the property of your dreams, you're going to end up negotiating with the seller. And I will tell you that there's not a lot of negotiating to be done here, because the French are simply not hagglers, and they usually don't price the properties much over 5% over what they want to achieve. So there can be 5% room in there, but really good properties tend to sell at asking price. We see over and over and over and over again a property that is just too good to be true, and if you want it, if you offer asking price, they are morally obligated to accept that. So then there's no question, and you're not having to battle anyone else. So in the last year, I would say that 9 out of 10 properties have actually been sold at asking price. Negotiation, though, can also entail including the appliances and the furnishing, things of that nature, which I highly recommend. And that has also to do with the taxes you're going to pay. Because step number 6 is once you've negotiated with the seller, and by the way, in the U.S., when you negotiate with the seller, it's usually done in the form of some sort of a written contract, which is pretty much binding. And that's not true here. You can negotiate with the seller verbally. You can negotiate by email or by telephone. And until a promesse de vente, that first document, is signed, in effect, you're not obligated legally to purchase the property. So the negotiation is really just a matter of bouncing back and forth the ideas between the buyer and the seller to achieve a final conclusion, which then goes to the notaire. So step 6 is to select a notaire, which is a property attorney, and to sign the promesse de vente. A promesse de vente is basically your promise to buy. It's the first document you sign. It takes at least a week to 2 weeks just for the notaires, the two notaires. And I say two notaires because the seller may say to you, oh, well, you can use our notaire, and it'll be simpler. We'll deal with one attorney. And I'd never recommend that. I think you should always have someone who's representing you yourself. So they share commissions, so let the seller have his notaire so that you can have your own notaire. And they will speak, and they'll organize the documents and create the meeting where the buyers and the sellers sit together and go through this document inch by inch to make sure that everyone's getting exactly what it is they want, and it's all in place. At that point, you're going to need a 10% deposit, which is held in an escrow fund by the notaire. So once you choose a property and you start the negotiation with the seller, you may want to go ahead and transfer that 10% over to the notaire's escrow fund. I recommend using a currency broker such as HIFX, who will save you commissions, because when you use your standard bank, the banks make a lot of money by doing currency transfers. In fact, my bank charges me 2%. And HIFX and other currency brokers tend to operate on about half of that percentage. So you can, you know, if you're transferring a large sum of money, it's well worth it. And that account can be set up in advance. Now, the notaires will create this document. You'll sit face-to-face. You'll go through it, and you'll sign basically something that says you're going to probably provide a mortgage or not. You're going to fulfill your duties. And it's going to take anywhere from 60 to 90 days before you get to the point of signing the deed, the act of on. And while that's happening, you're going to be processing the mortgage. You may, if there's renovation, you may be lining up architects and contractors or decorators or anything else you want to achieve so that by the time you do sign the acte de vente and you've got the keys in your hand, you can proceed as quickly as possible. And basically that's step 7. And then you walk away with the keys. You sign the promesse de vente. Once again, the seller, you and the seller sit across from each other, or you give someone power of attorney to do the signature for you. The notaire can sign on your behalf. Your consultants can sign on your behalf. We certainly do this all the time so that you don't have to physically be present. And that power of attorney will only give that person the power to sign very specifically. They can't sign your life away, only what you've given them the right to sign away. And then the keys are handed over and the property is yours. And that's as simple as that.
We wish it was that simple.
So, who's out there and who has questions?
Can you hear Nancy from Texas?
I can hear Nancy from Texas.
Oh, great. I thought I'd put you on mute, but I hadn't. I have a quick question regarding the second step, I believe, which is that I am single and no children, and my sister and I are thinking of purchasing this together. As far as this inheritance things go, I know I need to speak to someone specifically about that, but I've never seen that addressed to siblings purchasing something together in any of the things that you have on your website.
My personal recommendation to you is to do that as an SCI, even though it is your sister.
Okay. What was that called again? An N as in Nancy?
SCI.
Oh, S as in Sissy?
It stands for Société Civile Immobilière. It's a property company. It means that you would each own shares.
Okay.
If you each put in 50-50, then you each own 50% of the shares. But let's say one of you wanted to put in 60% of the money and the other 40%. So you could own 60/40% of the shares, and therefore you would treat it as a business.
I got you. So,
And I highly recommend this because you do want to speak to your sisters several years from now, right?
I always want to speak to my sister.
Okay.
She's
it
wonderful.
It just makes everything, you know, sort of a business deal, and it doesn't get personal.
Because then if one of us dies, I was confused by this, that then the remaining living person has to pay inheritance tax at that point, but if we have it set up as a company, then they just pay inheritance on the capital gains on their percentage of owning.
Well, you would be able to bequeath your percentage to whoever you want.
I gotcha. Okay.
So it gives you a lot of flexibility. It's going to cost you probably about 1,500 to 2,000 euros with the notaire to set up the SCI.
Okay.
But it'll be well worth it down the road.
Perfect. Thank you. That's a great help.
Okay. Anybody else?
Hi, Adrian. This is Marshall from New York. How are you doing?
Hi, Marshall.
I'll ask just one question at a time. I'm sure everybody else has a lot of questions. I've been looking at the prices online in a lot of different real estate, and I'm trying to figure out a budget for myself to do this. And one thing I don't notice is I don't really see anything regarding maintenance fees. Like, I live in a co-op, and I have a monthly maintenance fee here in New York.
Okay. Well, there's a couple of sets of types of expenses that you're going to have with the property. First of all, you will have some sort of copropriété charges, which are homeowners association fees.
Okay.
Those fees are completely different with every single apartment you're going to look at. Because an apartment building that has a gardien is going to cost more than one that doesn't. And there's absolutely no way to determine that in advance.
You'll know it
when you look at the property because the seller will have that information available or the agent will have that information available.
I mean, is there a general range, I mean, a very general range in terms of, you know, other expenses other than your mortgage that I should be, you know, worst-case scenario, so I could figure out a budget for myself to do this?
Sure. Okay, first of all, let me just touch base on the homeowners association fees. They don't come close to New York rates. Okay,
not even.
I pay about 80 euros a month.
Okay.
Yeah, and I pay 50.
So
pay close to 600.
Don't let that frighten you away.
Yeah, okay.
What about property taxes on? Are they paid quarterly?
Property taxes are paid yearly. There are two kinds of taxes. One is called tax d'habitation, which is a habitation tax, which is paid by the people who occupy the apartment. So if you own an apartment that you rent out on a long-term basis, then the person who's renting from you is going to pay that tax. But if it's a short-term basis, short-term rental, then you're basically going to pay that. The second tax is called a tax foncière. It's an annual property tax. The two are usually pretty equivalent, and they are so little, they are so low that they're almost not worth talking about. In the U.S., property tax is anywhere from 1 to 3.5% of the value of the property annually, and here it's 0.0001.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so... I have a 70-meter two-bedroom apartment, and I pay 300 euros a year in property tax.
Oh, that's so...
The cost of entry is expensive here. When you buy an apartment, you're going to pay about 7.5% in notaire fees. But the cost of ownership is very low, which is one of the reasons why it doesn't make sense to speculate on property here. You cannot buy and sell property here and make much money very quickly. It pays to own the property for a long period of time and realize the appreciation because your cost of entry is so high.
So by long period of time, you mean 10 years?
Well, the capital gains laws are such that in the first 5 years of ownership, should you sell the property, you're going to pay a third in capital gains tax. That is reduced by 10% every year, and at the end of 15 years, you will pay no capital gains.
Wow.
Now, this is if it's a second property. If it's your primary residential property, you pay no capital gains. So if you move to Paris and you're a permanent resident of Paris and your number one residence is that apartment, then you're not going to pay capital gains when you sell it. But if it's a second residence, you will. So I think, you know, anyone getting into this should consider ownership for probably at least 10 years to really make it pay. Now, that being said, I had a client that owned a property for only 2 years. It was a large apartment, and it was an apartment worth about €1 million. And he did net, after everything, after all the capital gains, in 2 years he still net €80,000. So it was still fine. Any other questions?
Now, we also have, also just on top of the, then we also would need like a rep of some sort there in Paris if we're not going to live there. And that's going to run another, what, $1,000?
Well, the agencies that manage properties
like
usually take about 30% of the rental.
And if you don't rent it?
Well, if you don't rent it, then you really just need somebody who can be there for when there are issues and problems.
Right, and to represent
Correct.
You at the meetings of the building and stuff.
Right, exactly. We do that work. Right, exactly.
Check in.
I mean,
and you provide that service?
Well, it's one of the services we provide, yes. We do a concierge service, and there's an hourly rate, but then there's a package over a period of a year. And you're not talking about a lot of expense to do that.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I mean, not really.
Right. Okay.
And, again, it depends on the apartment. The apartment may need nothing.
Uh-huh.
There are also apartments where if you've got a gardien, the gardien can do, like, a lot of the basic things.
For example, if we can come over for 6 months a year, 3 months a year, and then just lock it up for the other 3 months a year, I'm not sure that considering renting it out with all those issues and expenses would actually be all that valuable to us if we're going to be there that much.
Oh, yeah, if you're going to be there that much, of course, you could rent it on a short-term basis in between, however.
Yeah, okay.
Easily.
Okay, I'm a retired hotelier, and I know that you know it's hard on an apartment and on the other residents to have constant changeover and God knows what coming in and out. And I would think that there would be a fairly hefty maintenance involved in doing that: repair, furniture, upkeep, cleaning.
I find that if you have a good apartment and it's well furnished and you get a good rate for a luxury apartment, you get good renters.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have near the issues that you think about.
Okay.
Is
insurance more expensive?
I'm sorry, what? Insurance?
More expensive if you rent it versus...
Cheap. This is not a litigious society. Insurance is so low, it's ridiculous.
Really?
Yeah.
There's a difference for renting an apartment versus not.
Right?
Go ahead.
Is this Marshall?
This is Eric.
Derek. Okay, Derek, where do you live?
This is Eric. Yeah, Eric Peterson in Atlanta.
Oh, that's right, in Atlanta.
Yeah. Hi.
Okay.
Yeah, we were just over there in December again. I talked to you about renting the Arts and Metier apartment.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
And we stayed on Picardy.
Oh, you stayed on Rue Picardy?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh, great. Just around the corner.
Yeah, yeah. How is the Hotel Port au Foin coming along?
I don't know. I haven't been down there recently.
Really? You know, there's a big renovation going on over there.
I saw.
I know. It looks lovely. In the 350 range.
So have you got more questions related to this?
No, go right ahead.
Anybody else have questions?
This is Marshall, an agent. I don't want to take up too much time. I just want to get a few.
That's okay. Shoot.
Okay. Again, I'm kind of just putting together a big budget for myself. In very general terms, Adrian, you know, if I was going to be someone who's going to probably spend 3 to 4 weeks tops a year there and have to rent it out the rest, you know, assuming that I would have this 30%, you know, kind of, you know, agency fee over to take care of the apartment, I mean, roughly how long would I have to keep it, you know, rented a year to make this not break even but not too much of an expense on me here in this end?
Actually, that depends greatly on how much you borrow and how large your mortgage is.
Okay.
And there are a lot of factors that end up determining what your return on investment is going to be. But basically, you can pretty much rent a Paris apartment 50% of the time, a 50% occupancy, without having to work too hard.
Okay.
And with a good agency, or you're advertising it properly, you're managing it yourself even, which a lot of people do.
A lot of your friends.
Yeah, right.
Big family.
Big family and friends, yeah, which are sometimes hard to charge.
Yeah.
Well, that's one reason why you want to have a management firm, by the way, because
right.
Then you can always blame the management company. When all the cousins who you didn't know existed come out of the woodwork and want to stay in your great apartment, pied-à-terre.
But in that management fee, usually does the management fee help rent the apartment, or is that totally on the owner usually?
Oh, no. If you've hired a management agency or rental agency, they should have a good website, they should have a good base of clientele, and they should be able to fill that apartment.
They should be marketing for
you. They're marketing for you.
Right.
That's
right.
The point. And with that agency, you should be able to achieve a 70 to 80% occupancy rate. So believe me, they're going to pay for themselves big time.
And that's what you guys generally, you know, could try to hope to shoot for.
Of course.
Fantastic.
Of course. That's, you know, that's the idea of it. And, you know, and you can spend time choosing that agency to make sure that, you know, you're going to get the best. You can also do it yourself. You can also advertise it yourself on VRBO and in the alumni magazines, and there are lots of other ways of promoting your apartment to get it filled.
Sure.
I think you can rent 50% without working hard at all.
Christmas letters. Think Christmas letters.
I mean, I know that I've got a pretty big network, but my little Provençal right now, between now and the end of June, has 1 week available. I'm doing like an 85% occupancy.
Fantastic.
You know, Nancy from Texas has a question about termites and asbestos. I'm mainly interested in the older buildings, and I noticed something in one of your letters about one of your Paris Parlay letters about these issues, and you've already signed the Devant, and if it turns out there's like major asbestos issues, is that then on the buyer or the seller, or that's negotiable?
Great
or?
Question, because we just had this issue recently. The seller is required to provide what they call diagnostics of the termites, the lead, and the asbestos. Strangely enough, in the city, termites are mostly only a problem in the 17th arrondissement. Okay. So that tends not to be too big of an issue. Although recently we had a situation where on termites, they did note that they had found a few little tiny microscopic bugs in some of the poop, in some of the beams. And it was hilarious because it did become an issue in the signing of the promesse de vente. But since, you know, it wasn't going to make or break whether the apartment was valuable or not, everybody let it go. They could have, the buyer could have required the seller to have
fumigated,
before purchasing it. But that didn't happen. I have never seen asbestos be a problem in an apartment. Usually asbestos was a problem in most commercial kinds of buildings, not so much in 17th or 18th century buildings. I've never seen that be an issue.
Yeah, me neither. This is Elizabeth Adrian. I haven't really seen that ever be a problem.
Elizabeth,
yeah, I'm not here.
She is a property attorney, so
yeah,
you have never seen that issue.
Yeah, no, I haven't. It's really just one of these sort of things, due diligence things, but just so that everything's out in the open. But it's I've never seen it become an issue.
Okay, that's great. Yeah.
Well, what about wiring?
Now, as the lead,
these older
the lead content in tank,
concerned.
However,
they updated
very
wiring, but
we had an issue
updated
with
my
lead
apartment
content
and the rest of the building
was,
isn't.
Was very high, and the notaire would not allow the property to be purchased without the seller repainting the apartment and bringing it up to standard. And so we were able to do that, but that's the only time I've ever seen that happen.
You mean with lead? Lead in the paint?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lead in the paint.
Anything about the wiring, the electricity?
No. Lead in the paint.
Okay, but what about the electricity? I thought I saw something about you might need to update your electrical and your pipes in your particular unit. But maybe the whole building hasn't been updated.
In very old buildings, but there's no requirement by law. Is that correct, Elizabeth?
That's right, yeah.
Do you see any issues with that, or is that something I don't need to worry about?
To sell a property where the electricity is up to standard.
Yes. No?
Okay, you can, I mean, if you're buying, you know, you're going to mostly be looking at 17th, 18th, and 19th century properties.
Correct.
If they've been recently renovated, then it may be totally up to standard and perfect and no problem. If it hasn't been renovated in a long time, then you can pretty much expect that you're going to need to change the electrical box and maybe some and the plugs so that they have grounds.
Okay.
But it's done all the time.
Yeah, all the time.
So it's not like that's something that people don't know how to take
okay.
care of.
No.
Well, I have one more question about the viager, I believe it's called, which is, I thought there was something about renters that have to be very careful about purchasing something that has a renter in it, that we might actually buy something and never be able to
I'm doing this myself, okay, at the moment. I would never advise anyone to do this, but I'm doing it myself. A viager is a property that is basically sold before the death of the owner, and the owner continues to hold the lease on it until his death. And, of course, it's a way for them to make money to live on.
Sure.
Because they sell it pretty cheaply. And so it can be a very good investment, but, you know, you can the seller can also outlive the new buyer.
I've heard of that happening.
Okay. It's just and rented. That's not a problem. It's actually its ownership that causes the issue.
Well, you own the property, but you can't do anything with it until that original owner, now the renter, dies.
Right. I think I've confused two things, that it would be – we shouldn't be afraid of purchasing a property that is currently rented. I thought there was a law in France that if a property is rented, you can't kick a person out of their home. This is the renter I'm speaking of, not the owner. Like the renter has a contract or a lease for 3 years, and if the 3 years is up, I want to move in.
That's exactly right.
I can't kick the renter out. Is that not correct?
Elizabeth, would you like to?
Well, I think if you're selling an apartment that's occupied, normally you have to give the renter the first choice to purchase it at the given price. But if he chooses not to, then he has to get out when his lease is up.
Okay.
Okay, but if they don't pay their rent, okay, and you've got a squatter on your hands, then you can eventually get them out.
Yeah.
It's not all that easy because, you know, there are laws that will not allow you to evict them during the winter, and so on and so forth.
Okay.
But there's usually a, you know, quite a steep discount on the sales price of those apartments.
That have a renter?
Yeah.
Okay, I got you.
Occupied apartments, like 20% or something, or 30%.
And that's because they anticipate that there could be an issue at the end of the lease?
You know, well, it's partly that, partly because you're not getting, you know, possession immediately.
Ah, okay.
Well, there's also that issue of the 1948 thing, isn't there, where people who have rented, they make a big deal about that, things we read over here. People have rented apartments. They don't really have leases. They don't have contracts. And those people, as long as they keep paying their rent, you can't get out of them. You can't get rid of them.
Well, not the 1948 apartments. The 1948 apartments, the people living in them will hold the lease until their death, but they can't hand them down anymore to the family. That law has changed.
Okay. I bet that's what I would...
So you can buy a 1948 apartment, like a viager, very inexpensively.
Right. Right.
So it becomes
Absolutely.
A good investment down the road because, you know, the apartment I'm buying, I'm in the process of buying, which is a Viager, I'm purchasing it for literally half of what it's worth on today's market.
Mm-hmm.
And how old is the tenant?
Yeah, that would be
a
big issue.
Not to be macabre. He's in his late 80s. He's invalid. He's not actually living in the apartment. He's living with family. And, you know, I'm setting aside cash to offer him to break the lease.
Yes, I've heard that.
So there's lots of ways around it.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you find those?
Ah, you just have this networking.
Okay.
It's not that easy, yeah.
Yeah.
This one happens to be in my own building, and the only reason I knew about it was because I was called into a small committee that was asked to study the problem with the terrace of this apartment because the terrace was illegal. So I just got lucky. Rather be lucky than smart any day of the week.
This is Heather in Las Vegas, and I have a question.
Okay.
I'm the one that at the beginning had said that my husband and I are back and forth about whether we want to try to go back and live in France or whether we want to live in the United States and just buy an apartment.
Got married here.
I did. I lived in the 20s. My husband lived in the 18s. But he's Algerian. He's originally from, he's a Berber. So he has three brothers that live there.
Oh,
so we are lucky that we have contacts there. Two of his brothers are married to French women. So, you know, I have contacts over there as well. So we're lucky in that sense. I'm going this summer. And someone I had talked to in the last couple of years, because we've been kicking this around for a couple of years, that it might be wise to open up a bank account and have money transferred in every month. It will help us get a mortgage. True, untrue?
Untrue.
Okay.
Will have absolutely nothing to do with whether you can get a mortgage or not. That may be true if you were going to apply with very traditional French banks who won't talk to you unless you have a salary coming in every month.
I see.
But the lenders we work with are all working with non-residents, foreign buyers. They understand how to read U.S. tax returns, and they don't expect anyone to have a bank account.
Right, okay.
Okay. And they know Adrian. That may be one of the biggest factors.
No, it's really not a factor at all.
Except for that you can transfer your money over at your own vigilance. When you see the exchange rate is good, you can go ahead and zip some money over there just to keep it over there. If you know that you're spending it over there in the long run.
So would there be any disadvantage to me opening up a bank account when I'm there this summer?
Probably not.
No disadvantage, but possibly some advantages.
Possibly.
Exactly.
Right.
The reason I say possibly, though, is because it depends on how much you want to be involved in the French government.
not a lot.
Okay, because if you don't own property here and you have a bank account, you know, it could look a little bit suspicious.
I see. Well, and I hate to say it, but my husband being Algerian, we don't want any suspicion.
Yeah, this is Marshall. I actually went through the process, and I'm almost done with getting a French bank account here from the States through HSBC. It's a pretty, Adrian's right, it's a pretty intrusive process, even from the U.S. government. So I had to produce all kinds of documents, the Homeland Security, to the Treasury Department. It was quite...
My husband's in the middle of getting citizenship here. I probably wouldn't want to deal with all that until he's a citizen.
This is Eric, and I can tell you I have bank accounts over there, and it's never been an issue. We've had checking account, savings account at BNP for years.
How long ago did you open it?
About 4 years ago, maybe.
So after 2001?
You know, it was after 2001, yes. And we were there, and we had brought all our home ownership from here and everything.
I see.
And they were very nice, but it's never been an issue. Ever.
So it could be an easy process, it could not be, and there could be some potential advantages, really no disadvantages.
I have lots of friends, though, that do have bank accounts here who don't own property.
Mm-hmm.
They come, you know, and they just use their bank account when
Right.
Yeah, because my husband and I do spend a lot of time over there because of his family.
Then you probably would want one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can arrange, okay, with HIFX, for instance, you can arrange to do certain forward buying. so you can get take advantage of the rate of exchange.
Right.
How does it affect your U.S. income tax? Is that I've never had a foreign account, so I'm not really sure. What?
No, you can have a foreign account up to $10,000 without reporting it to the U.S.
And
right,
how
yep.
much was the amount again?
$10,000.
Right.
Yeah, but that's just without reporting it.
Yeah.
Even if you report it, it's not taxed.
Well, I'm thinking that maybe you make some interest, and I have to pay tax on the interest, and so I'm thinking, do they send me like a 1099 like my regular bank does in America?
No, but that's why, I mean, it's basically
no.
the honor
system. No, they don't.
Got more than
no, they don't.
And you have to report it, and then you'd have to report the interest. That's a question I would pose your account.
Okay.
Honestly.
Yeah, this is Marshall. I guess I had problems. They tried to set it up from here. I probably should have just did it when I was there. So I probably
yeah, probably a lot easier. They like to see you in person.
Yeah, and bring, like, every utility bill that you own and bring every homeownership paper you have.
Is that Eric in Atlanta saying
yeah.
that?
I mean, I almost had to bring a separate suitcase.
I wanted to say, though, that when I opened my checking account here, I didn't have anything, and I didn't have any problem doing it. So it
really
varied bank to bank.
Yeah.
Okay, so let me get this right. This is Heather again in Las Vegas. Eric, you're saying you were there, you opened one relatively easily with just your, you know, utilities, your, you know, homeownership information, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And then, Marshall, you're saying you tried to open...
What's the difference?
Marshall?
Yes.
You had proof of ownership.
What?
You're saying you opened it from New York, and it was...
Yeah, I did it through HSBC International from New York, and it was difficult, yeah.
Okay, well, that's why I'm going there this summer, so I'm going to try to probably open one.
BNP were
Hello?
Back again.
Who did we lose?
Sounds like it went blip, blip, blip.
I hope we didn't lose the star. Adrian, are you still there?
No. I was just, you know, I'm going to let this go longer since we kind of didn't start for, you know, 10,
yeah, we didn't,
15 minutes. Or
we didn't start for like 11.
I think one of the things, too, is that so much of it depends upon relationships in France. Because when I opened my checking account, the hotel I was staying at came down and vouched for me, and they said, we've been a client of this bank for 50 years, and this is one of our guests, and I never had to produce anything except my passport, and they took a Xerox photo of my passport, they gave me a credit card, they gave me a checking account, and that was...
What hotel was that?
No, listen, I've done this many, many times for clients. If I make the appointment and I handhold them into my bank, it's not a problem.
Uh-huh.
So I think that also has larger ramifications for buying a property here, and that a lot of it is done by who people know, and that's how you get some of the relationship, that you get to see good apartments, that you get to know what's going on. As one of the search people, in the last 3 or 4 days, I've had 4 or 5 different brokers phoning me, leaving long messages about apartments that they know are coming on the market. So a lot of it is done kind of over dinner when you stop in and say hello. Relationships really count a lot, so that can also be an asset, you know, that you might want to utilize when you're here.
Mm-hmm.
So this is Mark. I just have another question on this note, not on the bank account. So if we were to engage with your firm, it's one of the questions I have to ask is it done in stages? So, for example, a concern for me would make sure how much I could actually pre-qualify for. I mean, how does it work in very general terms of engaging with you guys in terms of first we try to get, you know, pre-approved and so on and so forth?
Well, what we do first is just, you know, the entry consultation to kind of get your goals set. And get you set up with talking to the lenders and sort of setting the stage for what's about to happen.
Okay.
And it's very simple to contact the lenders and to get the dossier started and to supply them with enough information that they can put together some sort of a pre-qualification, pre-approval in principle, which really will help you determine your budget.
Absolutely, yeah.
And the lenders will lend up to one-third of your disposable income per month. So your mortgage cannot exceed one-third of your disposable income.
disposable, meaning after all your, you know, your mortgage or your rent, your bills.
Right. After all of your other obligations, not including credit cards. So if you've got a mortgage on, you know, a property, your primary property or any other mortgages, and you're making car payments, anything like that, any other obligations. Now, they will also, though, count, take into consideration the rentals that you will achieve on this property as income.
Okay.
So that helps a lot. I mean, you may find that you can actually borrow more and buy more.
Do you still have to take a medical physical to get a mortgage?
Not always. There are a few lenders now who will actually do a mortgage on a 60% loan-to-value without mandatory life insurance at all.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But you want to
and
do this while you're
really
still working
and
prepping?
For older clients.
Mm-hmm.
So just so I make sure I have the math right on this, let's pretend I don't have a mortgage, I don't have a car payment, and I make $9,000 a month. Then I... that they will lend me, and I'm not going to rent the place, will lend me $3,000 a month.
Right.
Correct? Okay, thanks.
Yes.
It should be a very nice place.
Yes.
Yeah.
Great.
But you want to do that while you still have that income, not after you retire and you just have a lot of money.
Of course, I was making those numbers up.
You just made a very good point, and I don't know whose voice that was who made that very
Eric.
Good point.
About retirement.
Yeah.
Yes, because the banks here do not, it's income-based, not collateral-based
right.
loans.
Right.
They want to know how much you're earning, not how much you have in the bank.
Right.
So, yes, you want to buy while you're still producing
Working.
Income,
right.
not after you've been, it, also because of retirement, because of age. Because with the mandatory life insurance, they don't like to lend beyond 70 to 75 years old because
right.
the insurance premiums become prohibitive.
Right.
So the younger you are when you buy, the better.
Right. Absolutely.
So
or get a mortgage.
We're very happy, though, to see this new 60% to loan-to-value option
mm-hmm.
with no life insurance. It's particularly good for retirees and, you know, for our older clients.
Now, one more question I have. Do you also handle the resale of an apartment? Like if you buy your apartment and you're there for 10 years and we're all still together, you'll sell it for us, too, if we decide?
Well, we're not a listing agent, but I do have a service which is very similar to the purchase assistance, which is really just the sales assistance.
Mm-hmm.
It's just doing it in reverse.
Okay.
So if you, let's say you find the property on your own.
Right.
We can assist you in the purchase, and the fee is 1%
right.
to do that. And we would do the same to assist you in the sale of the property.
You would. Okay.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
It's the same. It's basically the same process, just in reverse.
Okay. Okay.
And Adrian, I understand you mentioned before about the advantages of the SCI in terms of passing on and so on. But what about the tax implications in general when you have it? Like, in other words, do you lose a deduction as a result? Does that change? Like, as an American, would I be able to get the same kind of mortgage deductions that I get off my property here?
Sure.
It doesn't really have any tax.
Well, you'll be able to deduct the interest you pay on your mortgage.
Even in France, it's not a problem from the American perspective.
No, exactly.
Okay.
But if it's a corporate, you kind of set it up as if it's a corporation, a separate entity. And
yes.
So do you have to a separate tax return for that in order for to get that?
On the French side or the U.S. side?
Side.
On the U.S. side?
Yes. Or either.
No, because you're just going to show it as ownership of X amount of shares.
Okay. So it's like a trust or something almost.
Probably.
What I would call a trust.
Probably.
Something.
Elizabeth, do you know about that?
I don't know about that particular, the U.S. tax implication of it, no.
Well, what about the France side? Do we have to do an income tax thing on the France side as far as like renter or income or anything?
Yes.
France expects you to report your rental income. I'm just going to say that.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
With an emphasis
because
on expect.
You're more than, I mean, very likely, as an American owner and you're renting it on the U.S. side to other Americans, usually through an agency that's operating out of the U.S. as well, most of your rents are only going to actually be visible on the U.S. side.
I got you. Okay.
Okay, but you understand what I'm saying here.
I got you. That makes sense.
Got it.
France still expects you to report it, but you don't pay double tax. If you pay tax on one side, you don't pay it on the other.
Okay.
Because of the tax treaty.
Oh, okay.
So it doesn't really matter, quite honestly. And if you're showing rental income, then you can write off a good portion of your trips here because you're overseeing your property, and you're going to write off all the expenses against it because it's a business. There's tremendous advantages to it.
Right.
Now, am I correct, just on the side, that you pay sales tax on a new property, but you are exempt as a non-resident on a resale?
There's no sales tax per se, but the government still taxes you about 5.5%, and we just call it notaire fees.
Okay.
It's just labeled incorrectly, because when the notaire assesses it, he's going to assess the property tax, and he's going to assess his own fees, and it's going to end up totaling approximately 7.5%.
Uh-huh. How about the sales tax, the actual sales tax, that 19%?
That's only on new property.
Okay, but on a new construction property that's built from the ground up,
new build,
you have to pay that.
Right.
Resident or non-resident.
Right.
But on a resale, you do not, because only the original owner pays that sales tax.
Basically, right.
But if you're interested in buying a new building out in the 20th, maybe, you're going to pay 19% sales tax.
Possibly.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Okay.
I would find that highly unusual.
Oh.
Yeah, I just know very few people who, especially Americans who are looking at investments that buy that kind of property.
Oh.
I mean, we just don't have the clients to do it.
Mm. Well.
Great.
There's a lot to be said for a new building.
I mean, obviously, it does happen, you know,
yeah.
and the new buildings can be really wonderful.
Yeah.
So usually they're high, and they've got great views, and everything's new and terrific. But most of what we see, of course, are people who want something central that they can rent in old property.
Mm-hmm. Well, they could theoretically build a new building in the city, too. Not much, but, you know, an empty lot or something.
An empty lot. Has
I saw one,
seen
one
an empty lot?
One time I saw one.
There aren't any.
No, there aren't any. Well, you know that Gambino place out there. Where's that? Out on the other side of the Butte Chaumont.
I have one more question. This
sure.
is Heather in Las Vegas. Adrian, I know that you do your seminars a couple times a year, once or twice in the United States, once or twice in Paris. And before I bought my plane ticket, I was hoping that I was going to be there during one in France this summer. Do you have any plans in France this summer?
I have a plan this summer, but it's in San Francisco.
Oh, that's okay, because I'm in
July 7th and 8th.
When is it, July 7th and 8th?
7th and 8th, and we're still finalizing details, so it's not absolutely concrete.
Well, that's okay, because I'm leaving July 11th to go to France.
Well, but you should just do a conference with
yeah.
you
just
know,
do
just
a,
do a
personal consultation.
Yeah, that's great. They're wonderful.
Do what? Say that again?
A personal consultation with Adrian.
And
you want to set up.
And so how much is a personal consultation versus the $200 or $300 for the conference?
Well, the consultation is $290, and it applies towards the search, so nothing's lost.
And it's one-on-one.
Oh, okay.
Great.
Yeah.
So it's great. I mean, it's all tailored to exactly. And I'm speaking to someone who did this.
Exactly. Very helpful. It's actually one of my consultations.
Well, Adrian, let me ask this then. If for some reason, you're going to obviously, you're not planning on traveling anywhere during the month of July and part of August, are you? I mean, if I wanted a consultation, I could get one this summer when I'm there.
Well, July I'm going to be in San Francisco and in New Orleans. So 2 weeks I'll be gone in July.
Because I'll be there until August 6th.
Oh, I'll be back by then.
Okay. You know what? Then I'm going to talk to my husband, and, you know, that could be an option, and I'll contact you by email.
Oh, it's a really good option.
Yeah.
That's
well,
brilliant.
No,
you know,
it really is.
It's absolutely necessary if you eventually want to do some sort of a search.
We do. And the thing is I just, the sooner the better. I had a friend, a French friend. She bought an apartment in 1997 in the 17th, sold it in 2001, and made a $50,000 profit. And ever since then, every year that goes by without buying an apartment, I kicked myself, and I kicked myself, and I kicked myself.
Well, you got to stop kicking. And by the way, I do these by telephone, too. You don't have to be in person.
I'd rather be there. I mean, if I'm going to be there, I might as well just come, you know?
Oh, yeah. You should do it that way. That's what I did, too.
Yeah. It would just be so much easier.
It's fun, too.
Yeah. And I'm going to be there.
You get all of Adrian's attention, even though the phone might ring.
Great.
Well, Adrian, this is Marshall. I have one last question, and you got me hooked. I'll do the consultation by phone. That'll be great. I really appreciate that. And my last question is regarding, does it help you at all in terms of getting a visa, or like a long-stay visa, if you have an apartment there, in terms of being able to extend the periods of time? Okay.
It's still almost impossible.
Owning property won't really buy you anything in terms of the visa. And it's not hard to get a long-stay visa as long as it's a visiteur and you prove that you have the income to support yourself.
Got it.
And that you really even want one.
Okay.
But we're going to talk about whether you even want one is
right. You better figure out if you really even want one.
Uh-huh.
I know I do.
Nancy in Texas has a question about leasebacks and the auctions. I don't have any idea what a leaseback actually is. I haven't really read that to begin to understand it. And do you have any experience with any of the auctions, and are they all tend to seem like they're properties on the outskirts rather than in the closer to the Seine arrondissements?
No. I'll answer both your questions.
Okay.
I'm going to answer the auction question first. The auctions are properties that, for a variety of reasons, are not being sold through the normal process, like, for instance, foreclosures and things of that nature. They can be really good buys. I mean, you can, and they're all over. They're all over the country. They're all over the city. Usually, they have some sort of inherent problem. And when you do purchase a property at auction, there's no 7-day buyer's remorse. Once you've bought it, you've bought it. It's yours, period. So it's tricky. And the people who usually buy at auctions are experienced.
Okay.
And they're speculators.
And they're risk tolerant.
Yes. And you have to have your money on the line up front there. Not all of it, but consignment.
Okay.
But it's fun, and if when you come to Paris, you should go to one of the auctions because they still use the old-fashioned method of the candle burning down.
I heard about that.
Yeah, it's great. So you know, it's tricky, and it can work. On leasebacks, a leaseback is a scheme that was developed by the government to increase tourist accommodations. And they are basically glorified hotels that are sold unit by unit, room by room, apartment by apartment to individuals without sales tax, so they're free of sales tax, with a 9-year lease and a guarantee of a return on their investment. So once you buy into one, you're stuck with it for 9 years. You don't have to do anything at all because there's a management company that manages the entire property and rents it out and does everything. You don't have to think about it the rest of your life, okay?
Okay.
The return on investment's usually about 5.5%. But I got to tell you that they have a really difficult exit plan. And it's not the kind of place that you want to stay in and call your own.
Okay.
They're wonderful if you just have money floating around and you want to put it somewhere and know that it's just going to grow and you don't have to look at it ever again.
Why wouldn't it be some place I'd want to stay myself? Is it too... not?
Well, it's really just a hotel, basically.
Oh, okay.
I mean, or a resort.
Okay.
It's sort of like... worth it if it's like a timeshare. But if what you want is your own apartment in Paris, and you want to feel like it's home, even if you're only there 2 weeks a year.
Even if you rent it the rest of the time.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not a good substitute for that, and you can make a lot more money in your own apartment.
Okay.
You can easily yield a 10% return on investment every year with your own Paris apartment.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Adrian, this is Sherry from California.
Hello.
Hi there. I have a question that's a little bit different maybe than some that are being asked. And my situation is that I'm 35, I'm single, and want to move to Paris, and I'm interested more along the hotel side, owning a historic inn, a bed and breakfast, something like that. Can you recommend where I might start looking for a specific agent that could show me these type of properties?
You want to own a B&B?
Correct.
Or an inn? Mm-hmm. Or a hotel? Like buy a whole building?
You got it.
Did you want to be in Paris?
Do you want to be in business in France? Let's start with this.
Well, how about this? Tell me the drawbacks to doing that. I have heard all different things.
Oh, my God.
From the fact that many people I know have said, well, we only work half a year because we can only take a certain amount of income and not have that affect what we have going on in the U.S. I've heard all different things, but I'd just like to know more about this.
It definitely deserves a private consultation.
Okay.
Finding whole buildings is difficult, but there are some agencies that specialize in that. But it's very difficult because most of these buildings have been broken up and sold off as condos.
Okay.
You're talking about right in Paris.
Yeah, we're talking about in Paris. Yeah.
Well, what if we went outside Paris?
Then how are you going to rent it? You go outside Paris, nobody's going to stay there.
Well, it could be an existing bed and breakfast or inn.
Maybe correct.
He wants to buy an existing business that someone wants to sell.
Yes, you have a hard time getting a mortgage for that.
Do you? Okay.
Yep. We had clients who wanted to buy a property in Normandy and turn it into a B&B, and there was no way the banks were going to lend the money for that because they traditionally don't make any money.
Okay.
They're bad investments.
Good TV shows, but
yeah.
Not very good investments.
Exactly. I mean, people who have B&Bs do it because they can earn a little bit of extra money while they're living there and doing other things, and it's just not lucrative.
Okay. The reason I asked this question, obviously, I'm debating between doing this here in the U.S. and, the place I love, France, which I would like to move to, but, kind of pairing up a business with a place to live at the same time.
There are a lot of ways you could do
that.
That would
yeah.
be a lot less nightmare.
Okay.
Than buying a B&B.
Okay.
Individual apartments, for
right?
Instance.
Right. Individual apartments.
Owning individual
right away.
Rental apartments is probably a way better idea.
Okay. That's good. I'm
They're
glad
very
I asked the question. Okay.
Very, very rentable.
All right, I'll pursue the individual consultation with you and maybe talk a little bit more about that.
Okay, you guys, I see it's coming on to 8:30. I want to thank everybody who's participated. I really appreciate it. And, don't hesitate to drop us emails and let us know if you have further questions. Okay? And
thank you, Adrian. We appreciate everything you do for us.
Yes,
well, thank you,
Adrian.
I appreciate all of you, believe me.
Okay.
This is
okay,
Marshall, Adrian.
Guys.
I'll send you an email regarding a consultation.
Thank you, Adrian.
Okay. Looking forward to it. Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks,
bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.